Well, we're up to about beginning of 1934. For 6 months, the fleet was gone, and Doss saw this as a time to catch up the study of the word and prayer and so on, but other ministry just roared into the home like water over the dam. It was, everything was constantly going on. There was a personal work class and of high school boys, and civilians had a Wednesday night Bible class at the home, and friends brought friends to be evangelized, and other friends brought friends that needed Christian fellowship and teaching. And so there was a constant uproar of things going on. Doss also ran a boys' camp up in a canyon with 95 boys. Is this too loud or something? No. 95 boys, sixth grade through high school, and 35 of them made decisions for Christ, and about that many more made decisions to follow Christ as Lord. And early in 1934, a strange thing happened. Helen Rittenhouse, a young classmate of Dawson's in Biola, had gone to San Diego, and she'd inadvertently gotten started into a servicemen's ministry and written a Bible study or adapted a Bible study series of three lessons or something that she was giving out to servicemen. And she was begging Dawson to come down there and take over the servicemen's work in San Diego. But instead, he made several occasional trips down to San Diego to contact servicemen, but he started, as we know, the home in Long Beach and so on. And they called their thing in Long Beach Servicemen's Bible Club Number 2. She had Servicemen's Bible Club just for want of a better name. She put that at the top of her studies. Well, now Helen had married Doss's old sidekick, one of the Minutemen, Lewis Coates, and they were running the San Diego ministry, and they came up to meet with Doss and Lila and form a kind of an organizational Servicemen's Bible Club Council, of which Louis was elected president and Dawson was elected treasurer. That was one of the strangest things that ever happened in history, I think. But he called, was pushing for some sort of an organizational form, and she was also a little worried about how Dawson ran things, and she didn't want to, if he was using that name, she wanted to be sure it was up to her standards. And the objectives the council put down, they put down four objectives in this first organizational meeting in 1934. One, Bible teaching in servicemen's Bible club homes. Two, mailing Bible studies. Three, distributing books, pamphlets, Bible study helps. Four, Bible study and prayer groups on ships and stations. So if you want an early navigator objective, so-called, well, that was it. And that was about the last we heard of the council. Every officer was elected for a year, but when Dawson got elected the following year, the election ceased. Finances seldom entered his mind either as a limitation on what he planned to do or wanted to do, or as a responsibility for accounting strictly for what happened to them. Finances just were not important. But he kind of felt Helen's eye over his shoulder on the finance business, and so I don't know whether he was prompted by that or not, but spring 1934, he made out a listing of monthly expenses at the Navigator home. Here it is. Rent, $25. Utilities, $8. Milk, $3. Laundry, $2. Phone, $2. Eggs, $1. Newspaper, $1. You like that? He'd given up the service station and occasional gifts from civilians filled in with occasional gifts from servicemen, and the Irwin Moons Church, the Montecito Park Church, gave him a gift, and they just got along fine and never were happier. Christmas 1934, the fleet was due back in, and so Doss planned a great huge Bible conference at the home, a Christmas Bible conference with all kinds of good speakers brought in from to just feed the men. He thought when they were in town, he'd just stuff them spiritually so they'd it would help in their shipboard life. Lester Spencer and Gurney Harris were out now and had enrolled in Biola. So he had the rest of the fellows on the ship, and there's spring 1935, 2 years after he contacted Lester, he counted 12, quote, foundation men in the nav work, in the servicemen's work. including the two in Biola and 10 sailors, with four more growing Christians coming along. Men on four ships in Long Beach were moving ahead, so that's the size of the work 2 years after Spencer. And though he could easily be one to lead the visiting sailor to Christ, Dawson more and more began to have his men lead the fellows to Christ. He'd even leave in the middle of a witnessing opportunity and let the sailor there finish up the job of getting the decision. More and more he focused on making laborers of the men rather than his own ministry with new men. And he wrote mimeographed letters of challenge and news and so on to the men on the ships trying to urge them on to victory and help them in their walk with Christ. Most frequent challenge that he sent out was to value the shortness of the time. He always came on strong with that. Work while it's day. He says, time is short. Time is moving. I have only just a minute, just the 60 seconds in it, you know, and he was constantly harp on that. Challenged them to reach men on other ships that had no contact, too. He named about seven ships then that had no contact. He said, we need men on these cruisers. So he was working toward a key man on those ships. Memory was the biggest continuing challenge, of course, though he emphasized other things by turns, the prayer life, the personal witness, and so on. He was nearly fanatic on his conviction of the value of scripture memory among the men. That never abated. Spencer demonstrates how they got the message because he sent me a tape and said that after 35 years, the habit of memorizing the word by use of the card system is still in practice. Anybody here has memorized for 35 years, I guess you know what he means. He said, with untold blessing and help to him down through the years. Doss's love of the word led him to apply a principle of meditation that has only in recent years come out by psychologists, the idea of using your sleep time to put the subconscious to work. He used to have a gimmick called HWLW. After lights out at home or camp or when they were traveling or something, he'd say, okay, HWLW. His word, the last word. After which each one of them would quote a verse and they'd say no more. And go to sleep with this word on their minds. Now that was just, I don't know whether it was a discovery or revelation or what, but it was a part of meditation. He kept looking for better ways to meditate on God's word. 1935 was the first topical memory system. Nothing so far had been given out except personal assignments in memory. And Lester Spencer gave me a list of all the verses that Doss first gave him to memorize. He just assigned them individually, certain verses to memorize. And they were some of those that we use today in the TMS. And, of course, Doss knew that systems didn't work. You had to work them. And somebody had to get on it. But the way he engineered this, he made a fellow take his Navy jumper off and he measured the size of the pocket with a ruler. He thought, well, this cigarette pocket, you know. He thought, well, a card can be this big, and we'll put it in a leather folder, and it'll just fit in this cigarette pocket. So the detailed way it was engineered, first he made 12 cards with verses on the wheel. Then Downing recalls how he and Louis Coates argued over the topics and the choice of the rest of the 105 verses. He said he was glad they were arguing about the Word of God because it sure sounded like a fight otherwise. But the topics were doctrinal and practical. 35 topics, 3 verses on a topic, 105 altogether. And that became a symbol of down-to-business men throughout the Navy. They were handed the 105, period, and told to get going. Dick Hightower told me that was his diet. Here's 105, do it. And another first, a new thing for that day and time, a gospel team trip across the United States in 1935. Spencer and Harris and Doss and them had talked about it the year before, but Helen, with the eagle eye on finances, said, you're not going to do it until your bills are paid, and if you're going to use our name. So they got the bills paid, and they were ready in 1935 to take this big trip across the country. So they they dressed in uniforms, Navy uniforms, Spencer, Harris, Diedrich, and Doss, and a civilian friend to play the piano. And their objective was to contact servicemen across the country and maybe establish a contact base at Norfolk and New York and Philadelphia and the Great Lakes in Chicago, which had just opened as a training station, and to visit the homes of some of the men and to hold meetings in their home churches. And so they mimeographed a map of the United States and sent it out and said, if you want us to speak in your home church, write us. And they got a new 1927 Buick and trusted God to provide the funds for the gas, and off they went. But and the name they chose to go by was Servicemen's Bible Club Minuteman Quartet. But Milo Jameson, who had Bible clubs, university Bible clubs, which is kind of the forerunner of university college groups, objected to the similarity of the name, so they thought they better change. And Dawson suggested the Navigators, and then late in 1934, there was stationery printed with the Navigators, subtitled A Bible Club for Servicemen, and the motto, To Know Christ and to Make Him Known. And the sailors weren't very enthusiastic about the name Navigators because they thought of these little teeny boys that had been to clubs named Navigators. They didn't, but it grew on them. And the 12,000-mile trip, 2 months of meetings, and that big, long name was just too much. So sometime during that trip, I think the name Navigators got its start with the Servicemen's Bible Club Minutemen forever in limbo. Then they began to find parallels with spiritual navigation, life, sea, some adrift, others underway, Christ the Captain, the Navigator's Almanac, the Bible. So it began to sound better than anything so far, and it stuck. Of course, they couldn't see then that it was just next to inspired because, like the wheel, the memory verse pack, it's become a symbol of a way of a life, not a symbol of an organization. It became Navigator, began to mean something, mean a characteristic or a kind of a person more than it meant an organization as such. The motto has stuck to it, it fits, but so many organizations have had to change their name through the years. What originally started out as Foremost the Gospel Crusade became Orient Crusades and then Overseas Crusades because they didn't think big enough in the first place. Navigators hasn't had to be changed so far. Whether you're producing reproducers or making disciple makers, it's all navigating. The end of 1935, Navigators moved to a larger 8-room home, $65 a month. New test of faith. They took with them Isaiah 60:11, their verse. And by this time, the San Diego Servicemen's Bible Club was the San Diego Navigators, and Dawson was the director of the whole business. This home was not as convenient to drop in as the one by the beach had been. So Doss began to analyze this too. He reviewed it and he thought, 200 men we reached at 33 Surf Line, where are they? And then he began to sort it all out. It was a come one, come all ministry, and it was not the place to make disciples in depth. And he realized that the home was a place to use for making disciples in depth in an intimate, natural setting. And this inner circle lived with the Troutmans. They learned, they watched them discipline their kids, they watched their relationship with each other. They learned in the most natural way some of the deep and basic spiritual lessons, the intangibles. And Doss began to see the home, the Navigator home, as a unique medium for ministry that couldn't be had elsewhere. Now this was a first also. Boys Camp 1936 included leaders assisting and was very elaborately done with the killing pace and events and activities and disciplines and systems, and especially there was a hard regimen for the boys that some other Bible club camp leaders would just cringe at. You know, one of them said to me that he thought Doss alienated the boys by making them work out punishments on the rock pile and things like that, but they all but one or two of them really loved it, and they remembered those boys camps. Here again, he was all out. Every effort had deserved all the strength and ideas you possibly could put into it. It wasn't just a backstroke, it wasn't a sideline, it was the thing, the boys' camp. Wholehearted. One woman said, his persistence and insistence upon pure Christianity was the outstanding thing about Doss. Incidentally, any of the boys that were suspected of any kind of sissiness were called a mama's boy. And he could not stand anything that smacked of sissiness or anything but rugged, even his 10-year-old boys. So the boys were continued summer by summer. Whenever the fleet was out, while Doss concentrated on the boys. The ministry of rebuke and exhortation, we won't have time to go into, but this was a thing all by itself. It was harsh. Doss was harsh and direct and effective, and he spared no one. He had a standard of perfection that made him willing to tear somebody apart and just put them back together again with no thought of the pain. But his deep concern and interest in that person made them know made them able to take it. It was impossible to explain. One sailor got it from a whole committee. Here's what it says in the journal. Ed, John, Les, Gurney, and I deal with L, somebody, five of them, and tell him whereby he has become a problem, particularly selfishness. He takes it okay and makes definite changes. And in a public meeting wasn't any place to hide either. Doss in San Diego, speaking to a young people's group in a church, he was so disgusted with their lackadaisicalness, he says, "Wait a minute. How many of you know what song you just sang 2 minutes ago?" And out of 200 kids, two raised their hand. "My Jesus, I love thee." And he let them have it. Just right there in the group. Nobody was spared. When Goodrick and Dedrick complained to him of each other faults, he'd haul them both in and he'd say, "All right, tell him what you just told me." No mercy. Lawrence Addy was probably the one in whom Doss found the fewest faults of anybody. He had nothing but praise for him, but even Lauren will show you his scars. We'll sell tickets for that at coffee break. But the underlying thing seemed to be that Christ's honor was at stake. Everything had to glorify Christ, and nothing and nobody could be allowed to stand in the way of that. If a life did not glorify him, that life had to change. And this was the attitude, I mean, that Doss had in correcting and rebuking somebody. It wasn't doing the best you can. It was being absolutely your best for Christ, because he was worthy. This was the perspective in which all this was done. In 1936, the fleet was out much of the year. Doss noted that the solid work was underway on three ships, that men on a dozen others were down to business. He thought of the oak tree and the mushroom and was reassured that slow-growing ministry would last. The West Virginia work was flourishing under Downing, who had made a decision the year before and was growing fast, and he was a natural leader anyway. Goodrick and Dedrick and Hook were in Biola by that time. Doss had a goal of a key man on every battleship by the end of 1936, and it fell short by four ships. Ministry in the home ran to Bible teachers and speakers and personal time with a key man Friday night and Saturday night. Doss spoke at very great length, but he got longer and longer winded and harping on the same things over and over. And finally, the men made up a committee to speak to him about it. They said, "You're getting dry, you're getting showing lack of preparation in your messages, and you don't have any power." And they felt the spiritual level was low, and so here were his men who he had trained rebuking him for his lack of preparation and power and so on. It was hard for him, but he took it, and he thought, "That's right. I've been fiddling around, fixing cars, doing shopping, and not spending the time in the Word that I should in preparation." So he had the courage to admit it, and he was kind of proud. I imagine that the men that he had trained and brought up had the insight and courage to speak to him. But this was a rare event, but it happened. He decided late in 1936 that the Minutemen, which had been dropped 3 years ago, that the regime was good and should be revived because it would help, and help combat the laziness of the flesh. And the fact that some failed and dropped out led some to conclude the discipline was imposed from the outside doesn't work. But it did help, and it did work for those who worked it, and the evidence is that the imposed discipline helped those who had a desire to respond to it. Lauren has often said discipline and desire have to be equal in order for it to work. But this principle in later years was called checkup, and it's been through many fires and arguments and criticisms, the principle of checkup and discipline. But it probably has facets that we could go into in application one way or the other. Now, the following year, Dawson developed the wheel check chart, which was a self-check device on all these items, such as memory and study and reading and so on, to help a person discipline themselves. The next 5 years, 37 to 41, Das was 31, age 31 to 35, was he was still firmly following Hudson Taylor's faith principle, not mentioning financial needs. But January 37, finances got so bad that he figured the Lord was signaling some kind of a move. So, a move it was. They closed the home and moved up to Camp Bethel for the summer because the fleet was out anyway, and they would just take off and not pay rent, and except the $10 a month that cost to Camp Bethel, which, in his own peculiar way of figuring finances, he thought, that'll save us $55 a month, and what are we going to do with that $55 a month? I think we ought to buy a car. So he took that $165 or $150 a month that he would save on rent, none of which they had, of course, but that they would save in the summer rent, and bought a car. $150, a 1929 Packard. But this is the kind, faith isn't only waiting for it to come. It's planning for it before it gets there when it comes to Dawson finances. This happened over and over throughout the years. Spending money you didn't have, for instance, buying this place. And it was amazing. And he asked the only officer that he was in touch with, the Navy officer, advice on what he should do. And he says, well, I think you ought to tell the fellows about the financial needs of the work. So Doss did tell the men on each ship, the key fellows, about the financial needs, and they were all mostly surprised. They thought, well, some church they thought had been paying the bills, and they didn't know navigators needed money. So they pitched in, and I suppose that's how they got the car. But this officer also offered the down payment if they would buy a navigator home in the fall, which they did, $500 down payment, and took over the mortgage on a small home, which is the first property to be bought, 1937. And that summer, Doss reviewed the Isaiah promises and looked at his ministry again, the Great Commission. His convictions about the wheel, memory, and follow-up, and discipling men were reinforced, and also the use of the nav home as a base for ministry was reinforced in his thinking. But another conclusion related to the necessity for follow-up was an obvious extension of it, and that was reaching the world would require concentration not only on discipling of individuals, but training leaders, an army of men in depth, many men to reach and train others. And how to do this without reducing other phases of ministry, he didn't know, but it must be done. He wrote the servicemen again what was the uppermost in his mind. Guess what? Greatness of the calling, just the shortness of the time left to do it. And Downing had meantime grown very quickly into leadership and taught classes on the other ships when the opportunity came. His gift of teaching led him into a very extensive teaching ministry of just plain Bible teaching on the ships. In other ports, he'd take a crew ashore and they'd minister in churches and gospel teams and so on. One time there was gospel teams in 8 different port cities, I think, all holding meetings in churches. Doss double-time service ministry. When the fleet did come in, he planned weekend retreats and all these things. And the Life Triumphant in Christ Conference was a big, huge navigator reunion held 6 successive years from 37 to 42. All down to businessmen from the ships were invited, and it was a great huge conclave. The work with the boys and young men was laid on Doss's heart again in 1938 that he had dropped since the Lomita days, the boys as such, except for the summer camps, and he decided to launch into it again. Now, he was overseeing a small club, and he was teaching a Sunday school class, but he didn't count that. But some high school fellows came to him, and they wanted a club. They wanted to learn how to witness. So he formed with them, as a beginning, a dunamis club. Dunamis meaning power, from Romans 1:16, the gospel of power of God. And he used the Minutemen principles, made it an elite core. It was a very great privilege to belong to that club. Everything was always a privilege that you wouldn't miss. Those guys even turned out for an early Saturday morning prayer meeting. Bob Hopkins was one of them. They I mean, who ever heard of going out and meeting in the park for an early Saturday morning prayer meeting? High school kids. Well, they did it. Junior high boys are called conquerors, or junior dunamis, and the elementary school kids had a point blank that they used for Bible study, where a little teeny blank that would fit in their memory pack for Bible study on one single verse, and we use that for adults now. Dunamis was the lasting element. The conquerors gradually graduated into the dunamis clubs as they grew older, and the dunamis clubs gradually embraced the college age, too. Then there was, this gave a whole new field to pioneer in. And there wasn't any young life yet. There wasn't any Youth for Christ to set a precedent, so this was a pioneering field. High school clubs, and he found that teens could be challenged to discipleship, and he made it tough. And so tough that one of the fellows, I think one of the Wilgus boys, said, "I'm never going back. I'm never going to take that from anybody." And next week he'd be back, and he'd take it. But he was rough on them. He made them toe the mark on their assignments, and to this day, one of the same fellows said that in his church, he's the head of the board of deacons or something, and they use these same verses that they used in Dunamis to lead people to Christ after the messages and so on. It's paid off. Summer boys camps were more innovative and more crowded, and the servicemen were counseling. Doss used the servicemen to train as assistant leaders in the boys camps, so that this was a method of training them. He overloaded the camp with leaders so that he could use the time to make points with them. He added a boys worker to the staff and a secretary to the staff. In early 1939, he opened a Los Angeles office for interviews, a club. The whole thing was club-oriented. The club interviews, people that wanted to get into clubs, people that wanted to lead. And so he had a big organization of leaders going. He started a CBMC in Long Beach, got a few businessmen together. He said, "Why don't you fellas get something going?" So they did. He taught them to memorize and to witness, and they met at his home for breakfast. A year or two later, he challenged them to do something with a serviceman, so they started a service center and took Lawrence Annie away from him for the director of the serviceman center. Well, they asked him, and he offered him, I guess. September 1939, the Dunamis Rally brought fellows and girls from eight towns. It was growing that much, the Dunamis system. Dunamis Gospel Team started, and they visited different areas to promote the club work. Five towns needed new club leaders. A girls' club started. Martyrus was their name, the Witnesses, meaning witnesses in Greek for their clubs. They had the TNT assignments, trust and tackle. Mainly the girls were in their 20s and wanted to lead high school clubs of girls, but they had a huge organization of young people working in those clubs. In 1939, while he was concentrating on the boys' work and the fleet was away, Doss discovered another basic principle of discipling: combined group inspiration and required performance by the individual helped more than either one alone. When the Minutemen in the early days tried to survive, they didn't have as much group fellowship and they kind of fell apart. But he'd have the individual demands for performance, and then the group fellowship of the Dunamis rallies, and this combination worked the best for keeping them going. The Dunamis rallies, monthly and bimonthly, met this need. At Thanksgiving, they'd have a big rally or party and so on, to get everybody in the whole area together for a lot of fellowship. And he worked to refine the requirements and invented the STS study, with the summary, title, uplifts, difficulties, your key passage, STUDY, acrostic. He liked those acrostics. But the chapter study, that was a new invention, based on somebody else's idea that had improved. Usually most of Dawson's ideas as far as materials were somebody else's idea that he adapted and approved and got people to use. An idea isn't good unless you get people to use it. He laid it squarely on the sailors to follow up the men that they brought to Christ. And you heard this expression, "Don't park your baby on my doorstep." He tells a story about them bringing new converts in and saying, "Follow him up, Doss." And Doss saying, "Don't park your baby on my doorstep. You follow him up. He's yours. You carry right on through with him." This principle was running through there then. And spring 1940, Dunamis and Martyrs, suddenly Doss got the idea of establishing this all over the country, all over the United States. A girls' team and a fellows' team would travel all over the United States and start high school clubs, get them going everywhere. Now, this is pre-Youth for Christ, and this was a tremendous revolutionary idea. Marina Downing was one of the first leaders that he chose for this team. He put it up to her that he'd like her to get with this team and travel and start clubs, and she was all for it. Incidentally, in one of those interviews, he told her she ought to marry Jim, which he had already passed the word on to Jim. That, see, we think arranged marriages are new in the Navigators, but they were going on then, too.
What do you mean, too?
Then he launched, September 1940, the Dunamis Martyrs Seminar, which was a six-month period where all these 17 chosen leaders, including Marina Downing and Lauren Sandy, different ones who were leading clubs, got together 4 days a week for classes. In the afternoons and evenings, they'd go out and lead their clubs, come back with their ideas, hash them over, rehash. And it was a lab in materials. That's where the fore and aft principle came out in regard to memorizing scripture. How do you remember the references? Well, in my club we say the reference before and after. Well, that's a good idea. Let's try that. So fore and aft, you thought that was just an accident. Well, that was hashed out in this D&M seminar that they had, which was a great lab on methods and materials. And then another new thing that came out of that was the new memory course of 49 verses every Christian should know. And it had 6 verses as the initial test. You learned those 6 and then you started on the rest of them. A little easier than 105. And this was also a lab in human relations, because Doss and Lila had never had women in the home. And this was very interesting. They had a secretary living with them, but Doss's brash, rough methods of handling men didn't quite go over with the girls. And he soon found it out, like, you know, breakfast. Who cut this grapefruit?
I did.
Well, let me show you how to cut a grapefruit. See, this is Doss's approach. Well, the poor girl would be just going through the floor with embarrassment, you know. But this was the way this was Doss's approach, and he learned that girls are different. So it was good all the way around, and they had a lot of fun. It was a big blast. They all living in one place, and Lila made everything a picnic. She always made every mealtime and everything a great event, an occasion, not just eating a meal, but it was a very important occasion. And the hand was another tool that came out of the D&M seminar, the methods for learning the word and for meditation. This was put together by that group. Doss saw 1940 as a year of phenomenal progress in the servicemen's work, and as he looked back 6 years to the gas station, he thought, my, this is marvelous. Two things that made this true were that, he noticed that the gospel teams were holding meetings in 6 and 8 port cities every Sunday, or any given Sunday, and he felt that the work would treble in 3 or 4 years. He didn't know World War II was going to make it more than treble. But a dozen men had re-enlisted for ministry. See, the original group of men all got out, went to Bible school. Now, Downing and the rest of them who were coming along re-enlisted for ministry on the ship, and he saw that as a great advance because it filled the leadership gap that was left when the others went out. And he saw training laborers as the key for the servicemen's ministry. The servicemen's gospel team went 1940, another trip across the U.S. with Vic McKenney, Bell, Waters, Taggart, and they saw Gurney off for his missionary service in Africa. But around the country again, a big test of faith, 1931 Packard. He was going to use this as a way to show the men how God supplied in answer to prayer. Well, just getting ready to start on the trip, and he found out Downing was grabbing the guys as they came over to the home and walking over to the park with them and praying individually with these men about finances for the trip. And naturally, the fellow would walk back over at the home and hand them a nice gift. And Doss discovered this. Downing was praying with the fellows about the finances for the trip, and he put a stop to it. But later in the spring, Doss and Lila sailed to Honolulu to visit the men out there, because the fleet was all out there then, and they found the work in a sad state, he said, not a navigator's work. He had commissioned a missionary that was going out to open the home in Honolulu, and he couldn't understand why it wasn't a navigator's work that was going on there. Of course, the missionary was doing the best he knew, which was to expound the good doctrine. And Doss says, what a place, what a burden. There's 40,000 men in Pearl Harbor, 30,000 army men. Wow, you know, he just could see fields white on the harvest, and he was going crazy, but the home was didn't get the message. June 1940, Doss put out the first navigator's log and TNT, timely news tips, for the clubs. The combination newspaper for the clubs and the servicemen. It was just the right time because troops were moving and the movements were secret and the addresses were hard to find, so it was a good way to keep in touch with the men by putting out this news thing. And he was very, very interested in keeping the men in touch with each other. Objective number one on this college we're having here. Unity and friendship of the Nav family. Doss had that very much on his heart in those days. He tried to get every fella interested in the fellows on the other ships, praying for them and sharing their burden. The momentum picked up. He visited branch headquarters, trips east, trips to Honolulu, 150 letters a month to the servicemen, and meetings with the Long Beach CME, CBMC, and the LOG, recruiting and training club leaders, leading some clubs himself, planning the rallies monthly, planning summer camps and carrying them out, plans for the Dunamis and Martyrs teams to travel. He was busy, and he loved it. Helping find houses for San Diego and L.A., designing new materials, miscellaneous opportunities besides that. He designed an ABC study blank just for a little high school group that wanted to have a Bible study. That was how the ABC first came in. He wasn't bound to conventional methods, and he kept searching for ways to plug the efficiency gaps and overcome human limitations in doing the King's business. Somebody said he was a man of very few inabilities. I think that says it. One young man that Doss interviewed for the Biola at Biola for the Nationwide Dunamis Martyrs Drive was Lawrence Annie, early 1941. He began the Dunamis work in 1940, and in that fall, he came to work with Doss full time. And immediately, he was given the responsibility for the whole club work, the whole high school movement, and the camps and the clubs from then on. Because everything was snowballing, there was just too much for everybody to do. The Troutmans had moved to Los Angeles to another and large home by that time, December 1940, a big house with a garage. Sandy inherited the room over the garage. And, you know, historically, he's a great garage cleaner. Have you all heard that yarn? The first day on duty with the navigators, Sandy said he spent cleaning out the garage. That was a sidelight. And then a spring 1941 trip around the United States. Doss stopped at Columbia Bible College, Wheaton College, and so on. And at Wheaton, there was a young student named Billy Graham who was among those challenged by his message on follow-up. And the way Doss could deliver those messages, I'm sure you get it a little bit when you hear a tape of his. He really drives right through the wall. So Billy probably got his first conviction on follow-up from that visit in 1941, which is only mentioned because of his tremendous influence on others and the way that that vision has multiplied. June 1941, the Army work was launched. A whole big drive had been planned to launch work in Army camps, and by correspondence with Army men, Charles Fuller, the old-fashioned revival hour, said, Doss, I'm going to send you the names of all servicemen that are sent to me to contact. And floods and hundreds of names of servicemen would come in to the Navigator office every week from the Fuller broadcast, which went all over the world. And there was a tremendous explosion in the correspondence contact and the personal contact, men visiting camps, and all these camps were just newly opened then, and heavy correspondence. The Young Believer's Bible Work, KLB1 for you old timers, was sent out by mail along with the first, with the Beginning of Christ, which was then called Initial B Rations, Initial Bible Rations, to memorize. And if they responded to that and showed sufficient humility, they were given something else, and to follow through with a second study and encouraged to send in for some more. In September 1941, a national article in Collier's Magazine came out about the Navigators after some correspondent had interviewed Bell on the California battleship. It was very colorfully done, and of course with Dawson's perfectionist ideas, he thought it was a tragedy that this very erroneous publicity should come out about the Navigators, who didn't want publicity except for the Lord, and he was very disturbed about it. And finally, they had to have a long prayer meeting to get the victory over this article coming out nationwide to publicize the Navigators. But as it happened, this was a tremendous blessing in that many new contacts were made for the work and was given a certain amount of status at a time when that may have been needed. December 1941, Dawson and Lila were guests at the home of Miss Mills and Miss Thomas, who were the school teachers who had helped him from the beginning. They were having a quiet Sunday dinner after Dawson had spoken at the little church where they were married, and Lila's father came in and told them the Japanese had bombed our ships in Pearl Harbor. And that was the real bombshell. Doss, at that time, was just the age that Lorne was when Lorne became president of the United States, president of the Navigators. 35 plus some months. But at that point, the physical explosion of the Navigators began to really take shape. And I want you to meet my colleague, John Crawford.